Coming to you live from the deepest depths of outer space, I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always is the bleak and endless void, ever wanting but never sitting. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 90, A Machine Gun Full of Vodka.
Welcome back to the show, Mild Alarmists. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Good to have you with us once again.
That actually really threw me because I'm looking at the tracks here as they're recording, and I labeled mine Johannes, but I labeled yours Stauffer. It's been one of those days.
It has been one of those days. One of those days that you just have to, you know, polish off with, you know, a nice frosty G&T.
Or little, two or three.
A little bit of podcasting, a little bit of board game chat. Maybe some loving later on.
Only time will tell.
Only time. All right, so our topic for the night is more game mechanic type things. We've got some to talk about. We don't have another particular game, but we do have an idea that really gets at some of the philosophical concepts of gaming that we find most interesting, and I think excellently illustrates Arthur Schopenhauer's notion of the excluded categorical imperative in epistemic phenomenology.
Bam. Y'all just got Schopenhauer'd.
Right. So, what are we talking about? I did that thing and then I lost it.
Tom emailed a idea for a game mechanic that could conceivably be interesting. He said, what if we made a game where the only way to score victory points was to pass your turn? So you spend the game trying to manipulate. One of those days. So you spend the game trying to manipulate things so that other players have to do things and you can sit on your duff. There would need to be some sort of loss condition to force people to do stuff occasionally. And then you had a couple theme ideas. Do you even remember what they were?
I'm looking at them right now. Okay. I found the email.
Good.
So there were two theme ideas I had that made sense for this. And I really enjoy that these are the two themes that made sense.
Yeah.
The first is that each player is a monk seeking enlightenment through meditation. And so passing your turn in that situation represents sitting in quiet contemplation of the mysteries of the universe and all of that sort of thing. But occasionally you have to tend to the monastery gardens, copy manuscripts, entertain visitors. I don't know, whatever monks do that isn't meditating. I don't really know much about monks.
They just kind of monk.
Just monking around.
Monking.
Are they the ones that like climb through the trees and chatter and they've got like tails?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, they're monkish.
Yeah, they're monk-y.
They're not the monkest.
They're monk-esque.
I've seen monker.
The second option, aside from monks, would be that you're just a bunch of lazy, worthless slobs living in a house together.
And which, if you listen to our podcast, may very well be the case.
You know, we've all been to that house. We've all encountered that group of early 20s guys who are just sort of hirsute and reek of substances that best not be named. And you don't know how they manage to maintain a residence in this establishment, but you do know that it is foul in there. It is gross. It is disgusting. And so the game is that your goal is to just be on your back lying around all day, and skipping your turn represents that you just spend a day just...
Score. I didn't do anything today.
Man. Anyway, but unfortunately there are things that have to happen. You have to eat. Like you gotta cram a hot pocket into your face.
Right.
Just rub it all over your body. You gotta clean the dishes occasionally, so you've got a plate to microwave the hot pocket on.
Right.
Somebody has to pay the rent every now and again, or you will be kicked out onto the street, and then you can't nap anywhere because they put those spikes up to keep the homeless from sleeping in doorways. And that's it. That's it. That's the game. And so you would have to manipulate the other players into having to do the dishes while you slept on the couch, like the big fat slob that you are.
So we've basically got a game concept that involves trying to do as little as possible.
Yeah.
And like for each turn that you managed not to do anything, you gain a victory point.
Something along those lines. Yeah. If you pass, you get a victory point. And then high score at the end, whatever that end wound up being, wins.
So you'd have to like have a certain number of, like, you'd have to have tracks for like a dirty dish track and a hunger track or something, mm-hmm. To incentivize players to ever take a turn. Because otherwise, pretty much, actually, even with some of those tracks, maybe the first player just wins because they went first. The last player, I guess, would win. Whoever could go the longest before they die from whatever track running out could just be like, I'm just not going to take any turns. I'm just not doing any turns. I'm passing them all.
You could dodge the some players have more turns than other problem by making it like a simulplay type of thing.
Uh-huh. On each turn, it's like, okay, pick the thing.
Yeah, pick the thing you're going to do in secret, put the card for it face down, then we all flip them once and figure it out. And nobody did the dishes, so you can't eat, but you tried to make a sandwich and couldn't.
Because there were no dishes.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. And so you don't get the benefit of passing, but you also wasted your turn.
Okay.
Or another thought I liked that I was thinking about earlier today was, what if the food wasn't... What if you did a thing where, like, the food and the beer in the house are stored in unique fridges for each player?
Okay.
So, like, you've got your food tokens, I've got my beer tokens, and so on in front of me. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's in a given fridge means nothing. When I go to eat, when I play my eat card, I can
just
take...
Just wherever there is food.
I can take from any fridge that I want.
It's like that guy that you probably lived with at some point who, even though, like... He was the one who insisted that you have separate groceries because mm-hmm. he didn't want to have to pay for whatever it is that you like to buy. You still noticed your stuff suspiciously disappearing.
Okay, so check this story out.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty good one. I used to live with a guy that we'll call Tarvolio, will be his name for now, because he was a Spaniard. And we're moving out at the end of the year. We've lived together for about a year at this point. And I'm helping him carry some stuff out of his room. And he goes to bring some stuff up from on top of the shelf in the cupboard or cabinet. What do you call the thing that's in a bedroom with you? That's like where you store stuff?
You mean the stocks or a pillory?
Right, the pillory. No, closet. That's what I'm looking for. And he goes to get some stuff from the shelf in there, and a packet of Hostess cupcakes falls out onto the floor. I should note, in this house we'd had pooled food. Like we all paid into it. We all got. You could eat whatever you wanted.
Right.
You just paid into it. And Tarvolio was the one who did most of the shopping.
Right.
Because he was a cooker guy. He cooked.
Cookist.
Cookist, yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, haha, hey, you had a secret stash. You were holding out on me, man, kind of joking. He goes, yes. Yes, I was, Tom. I hid it from you because I knew you would eat it. I deliberately hid this specifically from you.
You were that guy and you didn't even know it?
Well, not really, because I was entitled to the food because I paid into it. So it wasn't like I was eating food I wasn't supposed to, but apparently he feared that he would not get as many of the snacks as he wanted.
Yeah, but then he forgot about them in his closet.
Well, you know, you can't win them all.
It seems like a bad plan. So we've got this mechanic that I think is interesting. I don't think it's really worth building an entire game around, mm-hmm. though. Do you disagree?
I think it's worth building like a small game around.
Really, like a whole, like, so we've seen games, one of the games we like that we've gotten back into playing a bit recently is Space Alert. And in Space Alert, there is there are various areas on a ship that you're defending against attack until your FTL spools up again and you can jump away. And so there's different things you can do in each location on the ship. You can charge the weapons, mm-hmm. You can charge the generator, you can fire the weapons, you can boost the shields, that sort of thing. But in one of the locations, because each location has an A, B, and a C, and like you choose which one you do by playing a card with one of those letters on it, there's just nothing to do for C in engineering, and so it's just look out the window. And so you are effectively just... passing your turn, and for doing that, I think you gain an extra victory point.
I believe
for every
correct,
time
yeah.
a player does nothing but looks out the window, you get an extra victory point mm-hmm. at the end of the game. So it's kind of like that. It works mm-hmm. in a little bit.
Well, it appeals to me because it takes a principle of game design, which is try not to have players have turns where they do nothing.
Right.
And it makes it the entire point. So it amuses me in that
yeah.
way. And I think that could be a selling point or kind of a hook for it. The game where the goal is not to play.
Yeah. Well, we worked pretty much, I think the first game we ever tried to sit down and design, or maybe the second, we called Lunch Break.
Mm-hmm.
This was when Tom had really just started working in earnest in an office environment for the first time. How long had you been there at this point, you think?
It'd been maybe a year.
Maybe a year, yeah. Well, I mean, you were pretty recently married, right? How long did you work there before you got married?
A little over a year.
Okay, so yeah, it was about a year and a half, maybe. And we decided, he had this idea for a game where your idea is in some way to, like, I think it was like, get the minimal amount of work done for the morning so you can go leave and take your lunch break. But there was like elements of sneaking past the boss mm-hmm. and not getting caught by the gossipy secretary. And so it had a similar sort of feel of like trying to do as little as possible, like just what you had to do so that you could go not do anything at all.
Says a lot about my work ethic. As I started out in the, you know, the corporate world.
I think the office environment really draws that out of a person.
It really does.
Yeah. We got a ways into designing this game. We were at a point where we thought maybe we were ready to start prototyping it. We basically mm-hmm. just needed to make a board and I think some
cards,
or something. Yeah. And then we realized that we had made almost exactly, I think it was Dilbert the board game.
Yeah, we were like, this sounds like a Dilbert. I wonder if they ever made a Dilbert the board game. And so we looked it up, and I think it was the late 90s. They put out Dilbert the board game.
Yeah.
And it was the game we had designed,
yeah.
more or less. Like, you had to skive off your work onto your coworkers, sabotage their efforts, sneaking around to avoid being spotted by the boss. It was what we had designed. So we shelved it because it had been done.
I mean, It's not surprising that that's what happened, because as we were discussing the game, we were like, well, maybe there's this guy who just wanders around the office and doesn't do anything. He's, you know, he's like Wally.
Right.
We were pretty much referencing Dilbert characters to be like, okay, yeah. So this office stereotype needs to be here and mm-hmm. could interact in this way. If you get caught in a conversation with him, he's going to foist work on you and you're going to have to wait that much longer to get to your lunch break or, mm-hmm. or whatever it was that happened. Do you have other ideas of where you could, short of building an entire game around it, where we could fit this sort of skip your turn on purpose mechanic into things?
Well, I mean, it would, I don't know. I don't know that it fits well, because in a game where doing things is actually good and not just a distraction from not doing them,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be annoyed any time that you don't do things. Like, I think it's good to... I think in a game where it isn't the hook or kind of the trick or gimmick or whatever, it's always going to feel, it's not going to feel like it's you're doing nothing. It's you're taking another good option if it has something attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sort of. I mean, so how I see it fitting into another game is kind of like in Dominion, when you choose to buy a victory card
mm-hmm.
and you're like, I need this to win the game. But it doesn't accomplish anything for me in play. It just fills my hand
mm-hmm.
and makes it harder for me to accomplish things like lining up a bunch of good cards in a row.
Sure.
So in my mind anyway, a turn where you just have to buy an estate is kind of like a forced turn where I just had to take a pass, but mm-hmm. at least I get a victory point for it.
Yeah, but that doesn't feel like taking a pass to me. That feels like taking an action that won't pay off until you're well down the line, but it doesn't really feel like doing nothing because you're buying something, you're getting a card and bringing it over, which I guess even in our model, you would have to take a victory point token.
Yeah.
For being lazy.
Yeah, it's looking out the window.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're right. It would need to mesh with the theme. I don't know, to feel like you were doing nothing or meditating or whatever the case was. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think how it would fit into anything we've done. Because I still feel like I don't know. I feel like it is an entertaining mechanic, and I like what you're saying about like how usually a dead turn is a bad thing, and so mm-hmm. like building your whole idea around it is kind of funny and entertaining, but. I'm struggling to see it work.
Right, right. I'm struggling to see it work and still remain simple enough that concept makes sense in it. Because if the actual game of manipulating the dishes and the food and the beer and the set and the other becomes too complicated, suddenly the idea of passing, you're not getting to do the interesting part of the game.
Yeah.
If all that stuff is kind of engaging,
uh-huh.
you won't want to be shutting yourself out of it by having a nap.
Well, what if we... So take it back to what we had called lunch break. Take it back to the office setting game.
Mm-hmm.
say maybe you're not trying to get to your lunch break. Now you're trying to make it through X number of turns. You're trying to make it through your workday by accomplishing as little as possible. So now maybe it's not just taking a pass on your turn, it's being able to take a pass on your turn. So mm-hmm. if you've managed to position yourself in such a way that no other player can foist work on you, you're huddled in your cubicle in such a way that, or at the right time that the boss doesn't see you when he walks past, mm-hmm. or you avoid the chatty secretary, however you do it. And so now we've got a game where you're in an office environment and there are things going on, and like maybe there's a benefit to doing them, but there's a much greater benefit to not doing anything at all on a turn.
Mm-hmm.
How could we make that work? I feel like it fits the theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you could kind of play it like a golf type of scoring system, where you take nothing when you take a pass. You get no whatever,
uh-huh.
work token or accomplishment or whatever. And then whenever you finish a task, you get something, and low score wins.
Yeah, so then you'd end up with a game, and it would actually probably be fairly competitive. Everyone wants to do nothing on their turn.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe in taking different jobs around the office and assignments, you are able to generate work yourself that you can force on other players that
right.
they don't want.
So like if I take a job that it requires me to send emails to 3 people,
mm-hmm.
or send an email to somebody, and that's going to force them to send 2 more, I've suddenly generated
even more work than you did.
Right. I took one action, but I forced everybody else to take 2 or 3. So I've come out ahead.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
And that would actually work with the Slacker House model too.
Mm-hmm.
If I make myself a huge meal that generates a pile of dishes yay high that somebody else is going to have to deal with,
mm-hmm.
I force them to do things where I don't have to.
While
do
you're
things.
Not doing them,
right? Right.
So then we would also need to have a few. Maybe you could do. So we're basically kind of building not a CCG, a deck builder.
It could work as a deck builder, yeah.
How else would it work?
I don't know. I'm not sure where else it would go.
I'm basically seeing us build it. I mean, it's a deck builder. You might have a board, so, you know, depending on where you are in the office or house.
I was kind of thinking of it, too, as like a limited hand of actions thing where you have to use up your whole hand before you can repeat anything. So, like, if you had eat, dishes, nap, just as a real simplified example,
uh-huh.
and you would have to have played all 3 before you could start again.
Oh. Yeah, that could work.
So if I've already played my dishes card, I can't do the dishes again.
See, so I was thinking it kind of deck buildery, but not Dominion deck builder where you know what card you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might still be building your deck or hand or whatever from, you know, draw one from the pile or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then so as you go along, like that might be another incentive to actually do something. Maybe in completing a task, you get an attaboy from the boss that lets mm-hmm. you draw from the attaboy pile or whatever. And that one lets you, what was I going to say? I had an idea. It would let you foist things on other players without just being like, I did a job and now that means I can make you do a job. And it's very one-to-one and boring. It mm-hmm. could give you some powers that you could work with in different ways.
Sure.
Maybe you would, you know, be able to skive off one task, you know,
so,
on the up and up, like, so, I don't have to clean the break room today. I'm employee of the day.
With office culture, the deck builder. so then, like, an ideal hand, you would pull all cards that don't force you to act on them. And you could just throw it on and say, skip, I sleep in my cube.
Yeah,
But you might pull, like, say, a card that says, I don't know, you receive an email and you have to reply to it. You have to act on it. And then you have to play other cards in your hand to get it out of your deck and therefore not run into it again. But you took a turn, but now you've slimmed your deck a little bit, so you're not going to run into that a second time.
Right.
But you might also pull a hand where you have that and you're forced to play it, but you don't have any way to respond to it in the other cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're stuck with it. You had a turn where you did a thing, but you weren't able to resolve it. And so on you go.
Yeah. So you begin to see how hard it is to try to make an office-themed board game, as entertaining as that might seem while you're angry about your lame desk job. But I think our listeners might be interested in the one almost functional idea that you came up with for... Tom came up with this totally as a joke Kind of off the top of his head, we actually looked around for the rules for it and haven't been able to find them. So it may have been so off the top of his head that he never wrote it down. We're not really sure. But what did you write this for? I feel like it was like a holiday or something was happening that inspired this.
I think it was summer. So, because I remember we talked about it when we were walking in the town.
Yeah.
And it might have been the 4th of July was coming up.
That could have been it. But at any rate, Tom pitched this to me just like as a totally unrelated joke. And I was like, that actually sounds like a perfect, like what we wanted lunch break the game to be. But the game as Tom created it was called Don't Shit Your Pants. And we're going to try to run through and see if we can remember how it went. But the object of the game was to not your pants.
Yeah, you are an office worker who has just come back from a lunch at probably some shady, you know, taco joint.
Shady. There's black market tacos.
Yeah, you know, they're not regulated. Right, so there's some stuff going on in that taco there. Uh-huh. Listen, food poisoning's no joke, man. That'll ruin your day.
Yeah.
And so you're in your cube and you realize, oh no, oh no. And so you have to make it. So the goal is to basically, and this is just some of my classier work, poop in the most appropriate place you can. With the best place to poop is the actual toilet. The mm-hmm. second best place is the urinal. Or if you go to the women's room, still the toilet, I guess. No, you can go for the urinal if you're a lady. You can bust into the men's room. That followed by the sink.
Right.
Followed by the waste paper basket in your cube.
In your cube.
So that's okay. You can poop in the basket if you think nobody else is going to make it to the bathroom. And finally, the absolute worst place you can dookie is in your own pants.
Right. You don't want that. And it's so, in the name of the game.
Yeah. And so basically each player would have a rising, God, this is such a great concept, rectal pressure track that they would have to manage. And as it goes up, you're closer and closer to poop in your pants.
Right.
And you have, as you...
Duke in your drawers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slop in your lederhosen.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, you need to move down the cubicle aisle and make it all the way to the bathroom. But movement, as I'm sure all of our listeners and readers know... will cause the duty to come out sometimes if you're not careful. And clench walking is not fast. And your boss is making a slow circuit looking for slackers. So
right.
You, not only do you have to really just squeeze them cheeks together, you also have to make sure to maneuver in such a way that the boss doesn't see you. So you might have to duck into a cube and wait till he goes by.
The trick in real life is hold a folder or a clipboard and walk with purpose. And if you can really swing it, have like a phone headset
mm-hmm.
and just start talking. Like, nope, I'm on the phone on my way somewhere important that isn't the bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And you just do laps like that all day.
See, I have the advantage of working in a very large building where our organization suites are scattered throughout it.
Uh-huh.
So I could just walk up and down the main hall all day being like, oh no, I'm on my way to L, or no, I'm on my way over to B.
Not that you would ever do anything like that
never.
In real life.
Never, no, ever. Never. That would never happen.
You know what? It occurs to me that there was a Flash game someone made that I think was actually called...
Oh, there was.
Don't Crap Your Pants.
It was called Don't Shit Your Pants.
Oh, it was called Don't Shit Your Pants. Yeah. You played it?
Yeah, it was
like
fun.
A text game. You had to figure out the right thing to do to like get...
Yeah, well, it was great because like you would be... You would get your guy all the way to the bathroom. You'd be like, you had to be very specific in your commands and be like, open door. And
well, didn't you pretty much start next to the bathroom? But the commands were so specific that like,
right.
It took you 10 tries like, just to get your pants off and sit.
Right. Because the first thing that would always happen is you'd be like, oh, I'm right by the bathroom. It's right there. I'll just type, go poop. And your guy poops his pants because he's like, yeah, you forgot to take your pants off, dummy.
Yeah.
That game was a lot of fun. We should link it in the show notes
if I can find it.
Yeah. But then the only other mechanic in Don't Your Pants that we would really need would be the farting mechanic, which you can use to
bleed rectal pressure.
To bleed off. Well,
I'm not comfortable with bleed and rectal in this.
I was going to say, I hope there's no bleeding involved. But you can certainly reduce it. But as...
You said but.
As I'm sure we all know, never trust a fart.
Especially not after black market Mexican food.
Yeah. never gamble on a fart, because you lose that one, man. You lose it all.
Yeah, yep.
Unless you're on public transit, then all bets are off.
So this has been one of our classier episodes.
Yeah, that was my super classy idea for a burger. We should make that, though, by the way.
Yeah, like, I seriously? Think so. That was what I told you when you told me the idea. I was like, this is great. We should actually make this. And at the time, I think Tom was a little more meek, and we hadn't been horrible people on the internet for all to hear yet. And so he was uncomfortable with just how gross it was. And he's like, no one can ever know.
No one can ever know.
And now we're telling
that.
Everyone who wants to download our free podcast and hear about it.
I hope this is the one episode my dad listens
to. Oh, yeah, that would be, maybe it would make him real proud. I'll be like, son, I always knew you had it.
I always knew you were full of crap.
So if you have any ideas about that mechanic or other poop-related games or really anything else, yeah, you can...
If you just want to send us a photograph of the most girthy and magnificent Duke you've ever taken.
Tom is opening us up to that because I manage the social media accounts, and so he won't even have to see it. Thanks a lot, Tom.
That's 100% the reason I did it.
You're a monster.
But anyway,
if you want to do that, you horrible monstrosities, you can hit us up on Twitter at mildlyalarming.
Send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you can leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com.
Or you can write your comment on paper, eat it, digest it, poop it out, flush it. We will find it from our sewer headquarters.
It's true.
It's true.
And now we have a word from our sponsor.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by The Gary Smulahan Show. This week, Gary goes to the zoo and gets his hand stuck in a sea turtle. But can he get it loose before the zookeeper finds him? Uh-oh, Gary. Looks like you're in for a real wild time. Catch The Gary Smulahan Show on fine podcast distributors everywhere.
Now it's time for Wrong About Books, the part of the show where Tom tells you why you're wrong about books.
Actually, Ishmael was dead the whole time, and Moby Dick is just an allegory for...
Welcome to Wrong About Books. Tonight you're wrong about riding giant eagles to Mordor. I'm sure you're all aware of The Lord of the Rings. Peter Jackson essentially made it impossible to be a short, stout person without somebody like me coming along and calling you Frodo Baggins. As an avid Lord of the Rings aficionado, I get a lot of questions about the goings-on of various hobbits, Gandalfs, and Boromirs. Things like, is that weed Bilbo and Gandalf are smoking? It is not. Are Frodo and Sam gay? Probably not, but it's not really important. And why don't they just ride the giant eagles to Mount Doom in the first place? The basic answer, and the one that should suffice, is that it would make for a really boring book and movie. The second answer, which also should suffice, is that the great eagles of the Misty Mountains don't just sit around all day waiting for somebody to need a ride. They're not the taxi service of Middle-earth. Gwaihir the Windlord has stuff to do, like sit on mountain peaks looking regal and staring into the sun without blinking. The only reason he picked Gandalf up off the top of Orthanc was that he was flying overhead and happened to see him there. That moth business from the movie was Peter Jackson's idea. Peter Jackson also wanted Arwen to go fight at Helm's Deep, inserted that whole business with Aragorn falling off a cliff in the Two Towers, and couldn't resist using Gimli for nothing but comic relief. Peter Jackson made probably the best film versions that you can make, but he also had some really bad ideas in the process. So anyway, for those of you who are still obsessed with the idea of Frodo riding an eagle into Mount Doom like the guy at the end of Doctor Strangelove, thus ending the story around 1/6 of the way in, here's why it wouldn't work. In this scenario, as I understand it, Gandalf and Frodo ride eagles from either the Shire right at the beginning or from Rivendell after the Council of Elrond. Either way, doesn't matter. Recall the Siege of Minas Tirith, the giant battle at the end of Return of the King? At the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, all of those orcs are hanging out in Mordor. The Ringwraiths are probably around too. In the first scenario, where you leave directly from the Shire, you may be able to avoid them while they're riding around searching for the Ring. But in the second, you're going to be arriving at Mordor more or less at the same time that they do. In addition, at that point, Sauron would have also gathered a great host of Easterlings and Southrons to Mordor. At this point in the narrative, Mordor is stuffed to the gills with Sauron's forces. His cup runneth over with servants. Right, so Mordor is full of dudes, but there's no way Sauron would predict a hobbit riding a bird into the very heart of his realm, right? Not quite. Remember, part of the reason why Frodo was able to sneak into Mordor, aside from all the soldiers being away fighting in Gondor, is that Sauron's eye was distracted by the same war. He wasn't paying attention to the Black Gates or Cirith Ungol or the Plain of Gorgoroth. He'd made his move and was watching his plans unfold outside of his realm. At the beginning of the story, though, he's paying a lot more attention to home. He's building his forces, monitoring his defenses, and generally preparing to lay waste to the west. Part of that preparation would be keeping a sharp lookout for giant eagles flying into his territory. He doesn't even have to personally spot them. With so many orcs hanging around, any number of wardens and watchers would have seen them coming in time for Sauron to act. So here's how it would play out. Gwaihir shows up at the council and offers to act as the booster rocket to a hobbit-guided cruise missile carrying a one-ring warhead. They take off for Mordor, stopping to refuel in Lothlorien. Sauron, or one of about 11 billion orcs, spot them coming and alert literally anybody. Some Mordor cavalry, warg riders, horsemen from the south, or, if they're really unlucky, the Nazgul, follow the eagle to Mount Doom. When they land, Frodo gets curb-stomped, the eagle gets barbecued, Sauron gets the ring, and Middle-earth gets completely hosed. But hold on, you cry. Why can't they just fly over and drop the ring from way up high? Why land at all? Two problems. First, you'd be hazarding everything on Frodo being able to hit Mount Doom from however high up he would need to be. A stiff breeze, the eagle turning suddenly, the ring landing on a rocky outcropping instead of plunging into the lava, any of these could torpedo the whole operation. Granted, the West risked a lot by sending a hobbit in the first place, but you certainly don't gain anything by sending him eagle back. Second problem, the fell beast. Remember the big dragon thing that the Lord of the Nazgul rode in Return of the King? When Sauron sees a single hobbit on an eagle making a beeline for Mount Doom, he's going to open the gates and send that thing out. It's gonna happen. Even if he doesn't suspect that the ring is aboard, he's not going to allow that sort of shenaniganry to go on willy-nilly. A great eagle may be able to take the fell beast in a fight, but certainly not while protecting a hobbit on its back and allowing said hobbit to hit the target when he drops the ring. All of this is disregarding any other powers, traps, or monsters of Sauron's that we don't know about because the eagles played a very limited role in the War of the Ring. To summarize, no, they could not have just ridden a giant eagle to Mordor. And that's why you're wrong about books.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by that empty feeling inside. Do you wake up each morning wondering if it's even worth rolling your sad sack of self out of the bed? That's the empty feeling inside. That empty feeling inside. Because yes, you are a failure.
The two men were sitting in the open rear door of a large red conversion van and a rest stop somewhere in Illinois. Cars were zipping by on the freeway, and a few parking spaces away from them, a family in a red station wagon had stopped. The parents had gone inside, but their son was standing by the car, stretching his legs and eating a vanilla ice cream cone, which was dribbling gooey blobs of itself onto the concrete as it melted.
Daryl?
What?
Tell me we did not steal what I think we stole.
What do you think we stole, Roland?
You know damn well what I think we stole.
The kid licked the ice cream. Roland looked away.
I truly do not. I know we have a 70 grand payday coming, though.
You truly do know. Don't change the subject.
Last week you were whining about how much new tires cost. I'd think you'd want to talk about $70,000.
Keep your voice down.
Roland eyed the kid, who didn't seem to have noticed them. A long, white string of ice cream depended from his cone before separating and splattering on the concrete.
Well, I don't see the problem. I think $70,000 is $70,000. And if you have to steal a little, well, a bucket...
A bucket of bullcum? A big, sloppy bucket of pure bovine semen, Daryl? You damn idiot! Who the hell is gonna buy bull sperm?
Ranchers? They gotta make new bulls somehow.
Daryl, you are a grade-A idiot. What kind of rancher is going to buy mysterious semen out of the back of a van and use it to knock up his prized brood cows, especially without knowing what bullet came from?
Plop went another glob of ice cream.
Huh, Daryl? You think of that? No rancher worth the name is going to buy this semen. Nobody, period, is going to buy this semen.
Could take it down to Mexico.
Oh, great plan, Daryl. Hola, me llamo Roland. Yo tengo un bucket of bull semen. Dame dinero, por favor.
I didn't know you spoke Spanish.
I hate you, Daryl.
The men fell silent as the parents returned from the restrooms. The family got in the car and drove away. The kid flipped the two spooge thieves the middle finger as he went by.
Could always sell the bucket for scrap.
Mother of God.
Roland stood up and started toward the restroom. Daryl sat quietly for a few minutes, watching the cars go by on the freeway. Behind him sat the bucket of stolen bull semen.
Of course, you got to wash it out first.
Imagine a place where people are genuine, down to earth. Imagine a place where long, white beaches curve into the distance and without a soul in sight because everyone's inside playing Carcassonne. Imagine a place where wild animals come right up to you and lick your palms, whether you want them to or not. Imagine a place like that and go there. The Mildly Alarming Podcast has luxurious resorts, 5-star chili restaurants, and absolutely no risk that marauding 5-minute geeks will kidnap you and make you taste coffees in a cave somewhere. The Mildly Alarming Podcast. Your vacation awaits.